Welcome to Technotopia, a podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have Arlo Gilbert. He's thinking about health and the future of robotics. This is Technotopia. So welcome back to Technotopia. I'm John Biggs, and today on the show we have Arlo Gilbert. He's the CEO of Televero. He's a he's Life Science Angels, Orangeberry Corporation, and he studied at the University of Texas at Austin. He is thinking about life sciences. He is thinking about investment, and he is thinking about essentially telecommunications. So you're sort of a triple threat, I guess, right?
I guess that or either ADD or a triple threat. I'm not sure which one.
Actually, you got to show me how to do that. How to do multiple things without people yelling at you, because I get yelled at a lot that I should focus on one thing, but I can't really.
There's too much cool stuff going on.
All right, so tell us a little about what you're specifically doing, Televero, etc.
Yeah. So right now I'm the CEO of a company called Televero Health, and Televero Health is we do remote patient monitoring. But what we do that's really cool and different out in that space is we're doing machine learning. So we figure out how to talk to people, which is essentially the same kind of thing that marketers and advertisers have been doing for a really long time, except we're applying that to healthcare. So if a patient goes into a hospital and has a procedure done, when they go home, they'll go home with our application on their smartphone, and we have to figure out how to motivate them to do things like take their medicine or call their doctor or do whatever it is that their care team has asked them to do. And we use machine learning to create a conversation that is best suited to get that person to do the thing we need them to do.
So it's like Slack for healthcare, like the computer chats with you?
Yeah. So in a sense, I mean, it's a little early, so it's not quite that complex. It's not a two-way conversation. It's more like you get a push notification on your phone asking you to take your blood pressure or to take your medicine. But that push notification is very different depending upon whether you're a 75-year-old grandmother or a 40-year-old military veteran, and depending upon how we've classified your learning and motivational style. So the challenge that healthcare has is that people don't take very good care of themselves. They take better care of other people than they do themselves. And so asking somebody to do something that's there for their own good is often met with a lot of resistance. Huh. So if we can increase those engagement rates by a small single-digit percentage point, we've oftentimes doubled the level of compliance.
So in terms of – that's an interesting point. So humans don't tend to take care of themselves, but they want to take care of other people. What do you think that is?
It's a really good question. I think about it, and I think, you know, I'm the same way. I care a lot about my children. I care a lot about my wife, and I always tend to put myself second to all the things I'm doing. So I'm the first one to, you know, I'll be up till 2 a.m. pushing the boundaries of what's safe for the amount of sleep you can have and still drive.
Sure.
And I think it's just because mentally, we're visual creatures, and we see the people around us, and we care about the things we see, and we don't see ourselves.
Interesting. So we don't see ourselves. We don't. So what is it about a robot like that would help us down the line? Would it be sort of like our little mirror that would remind us that we should probably like eat something?
Well, hopefully all it's doing is reminding us and not holding us down and making us eat like our mothers used to do, right? You're going to eat this soup or else you're not going to Billy's house. I don't know the robots are an interesting question, right? Because you've got we got Google doing all that Boston Dynamics stuff, and well, I guess they're not doing that anymore.
Not anymore, no.
They divested of themselves of that. But I was listening to a futurist give a speech on just a couple days ago in San Francisco for the Digital Health SF and Neurotech SF, And his belief is that we're going to have Rosie the robot from the Jetsons within 10 years. That robot that's in our house, that's engaging with us and helping our kids to remember to eat their, you know, take their vitamins and helping us to remember to iron our pants, that will exist and that'll be here soon. So I don't know. I mean, it's you know, if you look at Time Magazine and Life Magazine back in the 50s, you know, you remember the pictures. They have like flying cars.
Yep.
And then they've got like pictures of guys wearing fedoras smoking pipes in their flying cars and women wearing poodle dresses and ironing with their robots, right? So it's like we can't imagine the parts that we can't imagine.
So we were never able to imagine that there was going to be no smoking signs in airplanes, but we could imagine a flying car.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So I think it's interesting to think about that in terms of like the Rosie the robot helping you with healthcare and helping you with taking care of yourself and your family taking care of themselves, and imagining where are we wrong in that vision, right? Is it really Rosie the robot, or is it that the vitamins are different? The vitamins themselves are now something that we don't actually take. It's something we inhale through our air conditioning vents or, you know.
I mean, I think that's interesting. The point about the robot dynamics is actually really important, because what you're saying is that there's going to be a robot that's going to help us survive, that's going to take care of us. What Google is essentially betting on, and what's in the near term, they're assuming that all those robots that Boston Dynamics is making, those are all going to be military robots. And the one thing that I suspect Google doesn't want is for a bunch of droids to parachute into, I don't know, Afghanistan with Google Android inside on the back, and that they start marching through the cities. I hadn't even thought about that before, but to be associated with that sort of robot is what they don't want. What they do want to be associated with, they want to be associated with the helper robot or a happy car robot, for example, right?
Yeah. I mean, look. I think that humans have proven that, you know, repeatedly that we can take amazing technology, and then we have the choice about whether we do amazingly awesome things with it, or whether we choose to, you know, become a bigger, scarier place. And nuclear energy is a great example. I mean, nuclear energy, if used responsibly, could power our planet forever. And we could have like cheap electricity that would provide, you know, safer environments for our children, cleaner water, all that kind of stuff. But then, you know, you always have the military that manages to find a way to get their fingers in it somehow.
Sure.
So I don't know. I guess I'd like to think I'm an optimist, and since I don't have the ability to influence whether or not the military does anything, I'd like to think about all the cool stuff that can come out of it.
I mean, I guess what does the world look like? This is our flat question. What does the world look like between in 10 years and in 20 years?
Well, I certainly hope that the world is a better place. And you know, the challenges we have as a species are going to largely come down to energy and population control, which all feeds into things like fresh water. And so I think there are some really, really smart people doing some amazing things to improve the life of human beings and to try and save the planet. I'm not a tree hugging environmentalist. I'm a pragmatist. You know, I need clean water to drink.
Yep.
So that I don't die. It's all pretty selfish. I'd like my kids to have clean water. So I think that in 10 years, I think that we're going to be making a lot of progress towards having an environment that is cleaner because of cleaner energy. And in 20 years, I mean, God, I'm going to be old. You're going to be old too.
Yeah, 60. Oh, God.
And you know, I think
this is supposed to be an optimistic one. We're supposed to live forever.
Well, I guess, you know, like my grandmother says, it's better than the alternative, right?
Yeah.
So if you get to 60, that's a good thing. You know, so I think in 20 years we'll be looking at a different world. I mean, from a healthcare perspective, and the things I spend a lot of time looking at. You know, if you're familiar with CRISPR, CRISPR is the gene editing tool. I think we're going to see a lot of diseases that just cease to exist, and we're going to see, we're going to see things like Alzheimer's be solved in our young adult lifetime. So from a healthcare perspective, I feel very optimistic about the next 10 and 20 years. I think that in 20 years, our children are going to be, the idea of a smartphone is going to be obsolete. There will be no such thing. It will be some sort of contact lens or something that's, you know, communicating directly with the implant in our brain.
Sure.
I mean, this sounds so crazy when you say it out loud, but I mean, people are working on this.
Well, I mean, I think the important thing is, like, I'm wearing an Apple Watch right now. I have a computer that could pretty much display high resolution graphics, measure my heart rate and a few other things, knows where I am at all times, could communicate with another bigger computer that's also inside my pocket. And if you said that to us when we were, whatever, I was born in 75, I got my first computer in third grade, so that was probably when I was like 8, let's say 84, 85. If you said to me back then that I wouldn't be using a keyboard size Atari 800 XL to play, to program, I don't know, little squares on the screen and mess around, I would probably laugh at you, because that's what we saw, that's what we understand. And now all of a sudden we have all this amazing futuristic stuff, and we don't appreciate it. It's going to be take another couple years for us to realize what we had in our pockets and what we have now, which is going to be pretty amazing too.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think, you know, if you look at Dick Tracy and Star Trek and somehow those guys managed to see the future. But I don't know if you ever listened to the comedian Louis C.K.
Yeah.
He's got a great piece about, you know, sitting in a chair flying through the sky with your internet and being angry that the internet's not fast enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're complaining about the wrong things. So what is it that gives you hope? So you have kids. What is it that gives you hope about what's happening right now? That this isn't going to turn into a blasted hellscape of fire and brimstone.
Yeah, you know, I've had a chance. I've been fortunate with some of the people I've met to get outside of the business realm and meet with some academics. And there are some just amazingly brilliant people who are working tirelessly and selflessly to take technologies that I don't even fully understand and try and make major world changes with them. I got to participate in a group called the National Science Foundation, ICOR. And that is a group, it's a government-sponsored program that helps academics, PhD students, to learn how to commercialize their technology. Because academics are not usually the most business-minded people. And, you know, the things I got to see were people just trying to solve all sorts of amazing problems. The group I was involved with, it was a chemical engineer who's using nanotechnology to bind cancer particles. So that's the kind of thing I see that gives me hope, is just knowing that there are all these people out there who are working really hard to solve big problems. And they aren't doing it for financial gain. They're doing it because they're excited by technology. And then, you know, having children, I think, gives you hope. Okay. I guess maybe it depends on your children, but
yeah, mine are acceptable, I guess. But yeah, we'll see. Yeah, so that's interesting. So in terms of, I guess what you're saying is that we even as technologists, guys who look at this all day long, some of the stuff that's happening right now, we don't barely even understand at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's mind blowing the kinds of things that are going on, like this the deep learning that's happening. You know, this is this new evolution in machine learning and artificial intelligence where nobody really understands how it works, even the people that wrote it. You know, it's like they've created this deep learning, deep mind product, and they now just feed it experience, but they don't really understand the decisions it's making. so even the guys and girls that are writing the code don't know how it all really works.
Well, I mean, that's the question. If we get artificial intelligence, are we going to recognize that it is actually artificial intelligence?
If it's good enough, I don't think we
will. Yeah, exactly. It's going to be pervasive and just leave.
Yeah. So and then that can solve good problems though, right? Because there are, you know, from it's not an economic issue, but it's more of a, I think, just a human issue. There are a lot of really lonely people in the world. You know, whether it's elderly people who are kind of at home, and it's not such a far stretch to take products like maybe the Amazon Echo, right? And imagine that having some artificial intelligence baked into it and being conversational with people to the point where somebody who was at home and lonely now feels like they've got a friend.
So that's an interesting point. So how do we stop, and I've been thinking about this as well, how do we stop or where do we stop it when we use that sort of technology? So think about our kids right now. I don't know if your kids are using the iPads that actively, but it's hard enough to get them off the damn iPads. And I could just imagine an immersive world in which they exist 24/7 and what that's going to do to their brains on that front. So what do you think is the solution to reduce preventing us from turning into like just a bunch of corpses in our beds, just staring at Facebook all day by moving our eyelids?
Yeah, well, if you got kids, so you've probably seen that movie about the little alien robot that goes and saves the Echo is what it's called.
Echo.
Earth to Echo or something like that. It's a story about the planet Earth has destroyed itself, and we've all gotten on a big spaceship, and we're driving around the galaxy trying to find a new home.
Huh.
But the virtual reality and all of that has gotten so good that the human beings become these just big fat blobs that sit in chairs, and their bones have gotten weak and they can't walk. And
I feel like Wall-E is probably
Wall-E. That's what it is. Wall-E. Yes.
Earth to Echo didn't work out really well. I think it was like a 49 on the tomato meter here.
Yeah, no, so Wall-E, you're
Wall-E,
right.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But there's that scene where all of a sudden
yeah,
the power
exactly.
turns off and they all get out of their chairs and discover each other. Man, I don't know. How do you – I wish I knew the answer. How do you fix that? Because, you know, my children do absolutely spend a lot of time on the screen. And you know, me and their mother spend a lot of time saying, go outside, climb a tree, you know, do something real and tangible. And I think a lot of that's just going to depend upon how I think the question becomes, is that really – do we decide that the screens are actually okay at some point in time? Is virtual reality so good that going outside isn't better than virtual reality? You know, if you're getting exercise.
Yeah, that's the question.
I don't know.
Huh. Yeah, so I mean, I guess that's your next startup. You got to build something that's going to keep people from melting into their chairs.
there was a great photo that came out of South by Southwest that was making the rounds on the internet, and it was a virtual reality demo, and it was a picture of a guy with this virtual reality headset on his head, and he was on a real bicycle that had the back wheel lifted up so it wouldn't go anywhere, and there was a guy holding a fan in front of his face to create the sensation of wind. and the caption was just effing go outside already.
So I guess the solution there is to make it, well, I can't, if you're in a major city, if you're in a Japan or if you're in a Tokyo, or if you're in a New York, you don't have enough room for a VR area. So I can imagine like you're out in Austin. So probably you have a nice sprawling homestead where you grow your pecans and everything. So I can imagine that there might be room for maybe a VR area, but as it stands right now, VR, unless we sit in front of our computers with our hands inside the gloves and the goggles on and don't move, it's really not conducive. But the real fun is actually moving around inside of a game world, which is massively realistic.
Yeah, indeed. I had a very good friend with a friend of mine who's doing VR content production. And you know, going forward, and probably a conversation for another day, you know, we were questioning where will games end and where will movies begin, and what does a story look like if that story can be viewed from different angles.
Yep.
So there's a lot of exciting stuff happening.
All right, very cool. So where can people find out more about what you're working on?
So you can visit televero.com, TELEVERO.com. And, you know, if anybody involved in healthcare is trying to change their outcomes, we'd be happy to help. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Arlo Gilbert.
All right. Thank you very much, Arlo. This has been Technotopia. I'm John Biggs, and we will see you next week. Thanks for listening.